This meeting is now being recorded.
Welcome to the ICANN ASEC public webinar on the draft final report of the ASEC review on Tuesday, the 20th November 2018 at 2100 UTC. On the agenda today, we have an introduction on the independent examiner, who will then give an overview of the scope and design of the review, interviews and survey instruments, give an overview of the draft final report recommendations, and then as well the next steps in a question and answer session at the end of this. The meeting will be or is being recorded. We will post the recording on the wiki page, and the draft final report is also open for public comment at the moment. I believe the public comment closes in the first week of December. I just added the link to that public comment into the chat. You can find it also on the usual ICANN public comment page and the ASEC review wiki page, of course. And with that, I'm going to hand it over to our two independent examiners, Chris Lopp and Greg Raffitz, who are on the call and who will guide you through the presentation. And with that, Chris and Greg, over to you. Thank you so much.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Lars, and thank you to everyone for coming to join us today. We greatly appreciate it. Look forward to any feedback that you have for us. Can everyone hear my volume okay? I'm using a new set of Bluetooth headphones and just perfect. Thanks for the yeses in chat. Appreciate it. Great. So as Lars mentioned, we are the independent examiner. Our agenda for today is here on the slide. So we'll start with a bit of an introduction, talk about the scope and design of the review, talk about the interviews that were done in the survey instrument. But really, we picture spending the bulk of the time talking about the draft final report and its recommendations. And then at the end, sort of, you know, filling you in on steps and timeline and Q&A. So that's the overall plan. We'll do our best to keep our eye on the chat as we go as well. And then just to sort of kick us off, so as mentioned, you know, we've been hired as the independent examiner for the review of the ASAP. Our team, who I'll talk about a little bit more in just a moment, we have deep practical and research expertise in domain name operations, internet security, but also nonprofit governance of volunteer-based organizations, and then also the design of interview and survey instruments and the synthesis of results from processing those types of instruments. So there's names at the bottom of members of our team. A majority, well, three of those people are members of Analysis Group, company that Greg and I work for, but our model is to partner with affiliates who are in academia or industry for the projects that we do. And so Dr. Shlomo Hirschbach and Professor Steven Weber are two affiliates who we work with on a variety of matters who assisted heavily with this project. Dr. Hirschkopf is currently the director of engineering at a company called Allure Security Technology. They build products that help detect different types of improper use of documents, I guess is how I would say it. So, you know, machine learning and whatnot. Before that, Dr. Hirschkopf worked at Columbia for many years. He was involved in the early setup of their DNS, the migration to IPv6. And also sort of building robustness into the system after a couple of attacks that had happened. So a little bit of his background. Professor Steven Weber is the faculty director for the Center of Long-Term Cybersecurity at UC Berkeley. He's done a lot as well with sort of organizational governance and things such as that. They're very focused right now in thinking about what are the emerging cybersecurity threats and sort of what are the systems in place to deal with them. Are they robust to, you know, potential scenarios of what could happen in the future. So just a little bit on their background there. But I think I'll hand it over to Greg to talk a little bit about this next section, the scope and design of the review. So Greg, take it away.
Thank you, Chris. As Chris noted, I'm a employee at Analysis Group. We've been engaged in a couple of past reviews with ICANN, and it's a pleasure to be involved in this one as well. And I think I'm going to talk a little bit first about the scope and the design of our review, and then move into a little bit of the details as to how we actually went about collecting information from various participants within the ICANN community. So this slide just gives a high-level overview of the project scope for our work on behalf of ICANN and our review of the ESSAC. At a pretty high level, we wanted to assess the kind of the current implementation state of the prior review of the ESSAC. There was a really, big overview question of whether the ESSAC has a continuing purpose within the ICANN structure. And then to the extent that it does, we wanted to understand the extent to which it fulfills its role and purpose, and whether there are any areas where it could potentially improve going forward. And then I think related to that, we also wanted to assess the extent to which the ESSAC is accountable to various portions of the ICANN community. So we designed our project as kind of a two-step process. So in the first phase, which is our assessment phase, we reviewed a number of documents that the ESSAC and ICANN staff provided to us to understand the ESSAC, its operating procedures, its work product, as just some examples. We interviewed a number of people, approximately 42, during and after ICANN 61. We then, after interviewing those individuals, distributed an online survey to the ICANN community and encouraged wide and broad participation. We also sat in on a number of ESSAC meetings and some ESSAC calls as well. We then provided our assessment report to the ICANN community, presented that at ICANN 62. And now I think we're well into phase two, which is the recommendation stage of our report. So we provided kind of a summary of our recommendations at ICANN 63. There's obviously the draft report kind of sitting out there right now, and we're looking forward to the feedback that we get on it. Here's the next slide. Thanks. Now just giving a little bit more detail about the interviews and the survey instrument. So the interviews were, as this slide indicates, semi-structured. They typically lasted about 45 minutes, but, as needed, we were willing to and interested in sitting for longer and making sure that we received kind of the full amount of feedback from each participant. We had the interview structured in kind of a flexible way so that based on an individual's experience and knowledge of the ESSAC, we could target kind of specific topic areas. And those are kind of detailed in the kind of the sub bullets on this slide. And we were very encouraging, or at least we tried to be very encouraging, of people to share both the strengths and the weaknesses of the ESSAC from their point of view and any suggestions that they had for improving the ESSAC going forward. So as I mentioned, we conducted 42 interviews, and the next couple of figures are going to give some breakdowns by kind of different groups as to who we actually ended up talking with. So as the slide indicates, most of the individuals we talked with were kind of the ESSAC members, either current or former. But we also talked with a number of ICANN board members, some ICANN staff or fellows, and members of other SOs and ACs. Most of the individuals we talked to with were men, although we definitely did have at least a little bit of representation from women in the ICANN community. And then in terms of the geographic distribution of the interviewees, most were from North America, then followed up by Europe, and then to a lesser extent, the other three ICANN regions. So after we had completed most of the interviews, we then used kind of AG's own internal experience developing surveys, as well as what we heard during the interviews, to develop an online survey tool that everyone within the ICANN community was encouraged to participate in. One of the ideas behind that was we wanted to ensure that we were just, we didn't have time to talk to every single person who wanted to talk to us, although we talked to most of them. And we, of course, recognized that not everyone would have enough time to sit down for, let's say, a 60-minute interview. And so we wanted to make sure that we were soliciting as much feedback as possible. The survey was open from April 18th through May 25th. And then the next slide, we'll begin to dive into a little bit of kind of the same type of information that I talked about for the interviewees, but now for the survey respondents. So here this gives the kind of the SOAC or other affiliation breakdown of the survey respondents. We can probably go to the next slide now, please. Thank you. This then gives the gender composition of those who responded to the survey. And then finally, this gives the geographical distribution. And I guess one thing that's worth noting that I didn't mention a little earlier is we had 52 complete survey responses and then a total of 80 partial or complete responses. And then I think now we can move to the next slide, and I will pass it back over to Chris.
Yes, and I see a question in the chat from Maxim or Maxim and asking about, you know, were all SOs and AACs represented in the interviews? The short answer is, you know, no, to some extent we could only meet with the people who made time to meet with us. So what we did is we, you know, worked with VSAC and with NSI to come up with a list of people to reach out to. We also handed out little flyers, I guess you would say, to, you know, people outside of meetings to let them know that we were there and available for anyone who wanted to come talk to us. You know, we did specifically focus on trying to reach out to people who, you know, we heard might be useful to talk to at specific SOs and ACs. And also via remote interview, we managed to sort of track down some people who were not at at the ICANN meeting itself. So not perfect representation, but, you know, definitely something we were focused on. And if we sort of heard something that, you know, related to one SO or AC, we did our best to follow up. Greg, do you have other thoughts on that question?
No, I think that's exactly right, Chris.
Thank you. So just to start with a little bit of an overview of the assessment report, which was the first stage, and this actually is a subset of the final report. So if you're interested in reading things in full, you can just read the draft final report. You'll get the contents of the assessment report. The order is a little bit different. But at a high level, you know, we found the ESAC is performing very well. It creates a large sort of number of useful documents focusing on security issues. But, you know, like all organizations, there are ways to continually improve and refine things, and, you know, doing well isn't necessarily perfection. And so, you know, in our 58-page assessment report, we contain 22 different assessment points on topics such as what you see here, the effectiveness of the ESAC, their selection process for work, interaction with other SOACs, size and membership, transparency, accountability, and then also the prior review implementation. And so from those 22 assessment points, 30 different recommendations were made across five categories, which you can see here. And these categories are the order that we keep things up to talk about with you today. Now, I will say, just in the interest of time, there are some recommendations and assessment findings that are not in this deck. We think that, you know, the major ones are, but, you know, if you'd like to read through the executive summary of the final report, you'll see them all listed there in terms of the recommendations. So, yeah. Greg, anything else before we dive in?
No, that sounds good, Chris.
Okay. Great. And then I will say, you know, the report published so far is a draft final report, so some things may change from what we see here, particularly based on the feedback that we get in the rest of the open comment period. So just to sort of tee these slides up, we'll generally present a finding and then some related assessment recommendations. And so, you know, that first broad question about the sort of purpose of the ESAC. You know, one of our findings is just that the ESAC is widely acknowledged to be very important to the overall mission of ICANN. And the role of the ESAC is closely aligned with ICANN's mission. And so, you know, here we have a survey result. We'll present some of these throughout this presentation. The figure numbers are the figure numbers on the report. So apologies, they're not in order numbered for this deck, but you can cross-reference as needed. And here you'll see these bar charts are typically split between ESAC members, the ICANN board, members of SOACs, and those who identify as other. And so you can see out of everyone who filled in the survey, who answered this question, you know, almost everyone is in agreement that the ESAC is very important to the mission or important to the mission of ICANN. So the recommendation from there is sort of a simple one. The ESAC has a clear continuing purpose. Its existence as an advisory committee should continue. To get at the high level there. Now, one of the central points talked about in this report is this tension of timeliness. And so there's some concern among members of the ESAC that the advice it provides to the ICANN board may not be implemented or acted on in a timely manner. Similarly, there's concern on members of the ICANN board that, you know, maybe the SAC doesn't provide advice quickly enough. And so the next recommendation sort of relates to these two points. Here's just another high-level survey, sort of how effective or ineffective are the outcomes from the advisory process. You know, a lot of people saying effective, you know, not everyone saying very effective, but there's some there, you know, some neutral, some ineffective. I think the report talks more about, you know, granularity and what people were thinking based on interviews with this kind of question and based on pre-answer responses. So recommendations related to this. You know, so we recommend that the SAC ensure that each of its advisories or reports they provide includes a high-level summary that outlines the topic or issue in easily understandable terms. A lot already do that, but then also list the key findings with uniquely numbered recommendations. And this uniquely numbered bit is a newer bit of this. Just to assist the board in interpreting SAC's advice, but also making sure that each recommendation is easy to identify and track through decisions and eventually through implementation. And you'll see that circled back to you in a next upcoming recommendation. So that's one thing. The other thing here is recommending that the SAC work to ensure that the board liaison has the opportunity to always review and provide feedback on that summary and on the full document before submission to the board so that the SAC can align with its liaison on both the talking points and also the potential board response timing, taking into account that the board liaison has a good idea of the other things on the board's plate at that moment in time. He can sort of help set expectations for, you know, where in the pile will this fall? When should we maybe nudge the board again if they don't respond? And, you know, how do we sort of frame this up such that, you know, the most important parts will be acted upon quickly? With that in mind, you know, there is this board action request registrar that exists. And here's a figure that shows the current status of items in that registrar. This is where the board logs items made and recommendations to it from various ACs. And you can see an interesting feature of the SAC advice here, which is if you look at that phase four implement SAC box, there are 27 items currently in implementation. And I think, you know, we learned that this section is some of what creates this feeling that maybe advice is not being responded to quickly, because the board register itself is set up to really track things until there's a decision that it should be implemented, but not really past that point in a really discrete way. And so our recommendation here is that the SAC's board liaison should work with the board and staff to think about this problem and make sure that the registrar accurately captures information required to understand the status of advice, you know, from the time that advice exists through its implementation. And, you know, we suggest in the report some potential fields, but really that should be a decision between the SAC liaison, the board, and the SAC. But, you know, date last updated, action splitting apart the action taken by the board from the current implementation status and being really clear what the point of contact is to follow up if there's a question, just to make all of that a little bit more straightforward. With that in mind, you know, a more clear ARR should assist the SAC in periodically reviewing the implementation state of past and future advice provided to the board. As it stands right now, it's a little bit tricky to do that. And the goal would be such that, you know, that ARR can be the cheat sheet where people know who to follow up with or to check in on something from there. Is there anything else I wanted to say about that? I think that's it. So on this slide, we have this poll result asking, you know, how timely or untimely the board is in reacting to and potentially incorporating SAC advice. You can see a good number of people said in a somewhat timely manner, but there are a lot of people who said somewhat untimely, neutral, and no one is saying, you know, oh, the ICANN board is very timely in responding. Now, the other side of this is of course, the bit where, you know, others saying, well, you know, what about the SAC? They have this very great, you know, consensus-based process, but it's not always fast enough. And so two recommendations to that point. And I see a question in the chat, how do we define other? So to some extent, that's people, anyone who didn't feel like they fell into one of the other categories. The survey was sent out to SOs and ACs. It was posted via some of ICANN's social media. Angie, are there other main categories that I'm not thinking of for how we distributed people who then might self-identify as other? No. So there was a free text field in there, and a lot of those people seemed to be on either particular subcommittees of an SRO or an AC, and I think they had just picked other and then filled that in, but there were definitely people at large as well, or people who have gone to ICANN meeting. We looked at that. We didn't see anything sort of strange or biasing, but yeah. So I think back to this, no problem. Thanks for the question. Back to the slide here, for time-sensitive issues, we recommend the SAC establish processes and deadlines that take into account the timelines of other ICANN entities. And this is something we definitely saw, informally talked about within the SAC and with the SAC staff. But at the same time, when there are times that, a question really needs to be thought about in more detail to make sound security advice, there might still be time where the SAC needs to push back and say, hey, this isn't just workable, and sort of explain, why that is. So this recommendation really is that, the timelines are important to think about and to plan around as much as possible, but of course just dictating that it always must be followed doesn't quite make sense in this particular context. One thing we heard a lot about, particularly from the board, however, is that, the SAC consensus-based process is really, really useful, but there are times where the board just needs to understand an issue at a high level. It needs to be able to understand, even if there isn't a consensus on the issue, even if there's differing opinions, sort of an idea of what that landscape is and what those opinions are. And so the way that, that sort of come about here is this idea of providing a quick look for a particular issue where, the SAC maybe via correspondence series, that we're not going to get to how to implement here, but can give the board a quick look on a particular issue, maybe without studying it all the way through to consensus. And as part of that, as we note here, some issues that might not be possible with, and so the SAC should certainly work to refine requests or questions to make them clear in that regard. So the next finding, the SAC is well prepared to deal with emerging security threats. However, it was noted that the SAC doesn't have a formal procedure geared towards identifying emerging threats. So there's a good question here, high-level quick look. Isn't that something the board liaison could do? I think as an individual, the board liaison certainly could. There's a tension within the SAC, which is that, no one individual on the SAC can speak for the SAC as a whole. And just because, so many of these issues are complicated and there's a variety of viewpoints that the SAC wants to consider before it's speaking. So I think to some extent, Jim, the answer is, yes, but that would be speaking from the individual perspective of the board liaison. And I think what we're suggesting here is group sourcing to some extent from the SAC as a whole without forcing the SAC to, come to a consensus as, this is the way forward, if that makes sense. So this bit on formal procedures, and the SAC definitely has informal procedures by which topics are selected. People generally feel as though the process as it is effective, but our recommendation really is that the SAC formalize this a little bit more and have a lightweight annual process geared towards setting priorities and starting to think not just about sort of the short term, but also to really think about the medium term, and the word starting wasn't the right word for me to use. They definitely think about these things. But just having that in writing a little bit and having a formalized process to reflect on that. And there are a couple places later in this presentation we'll circle back to this point. But by doing that and having that articulated, that can then flow into other processes that become useful. So for example, number 9 here, once you have an idea of your 1-year and sort of 5-year expected plans, then the membership committee of the SAC can look at that, think about that, and compare that to the current listed membership, and start thinking about, you know, well, are there different skills that we should have on the SAC? Is there someone rolling off soon who, you know, we think needs to be replaced? That kind of thing. I'll just pause for a second. Greg, do you have anything else you'd like to say on this so far?
No, I don't. I think you're doing a nice job of kind of summarizing a large number of findings. So, yeah, nothing right now.
All right, great. Please jump in. The next finding here is really one of the largest impediments to the SAC success, and this is very typical for volunteer organizations, is that, you know, the organization itself is volunteer-based, but it has a very large amount of work to do. And there's a concern or something that's been expressed to us, which is, you know, it feels like more is being asked of us. And, you know, while we can do it right now, if people continue to ask for more and more, you know, there might be a time down the road where it's too much. Again, sort of see the prior point about, you know, 1 in 5 year planning. As part of that, you know, we also think the SAC should explicitly communicate the reasons for its decision around topic selection with others in ICANN. And when new requests come in, those should be compared against the current set of priorities and communicated about accordingly, right? Because trade-offs might need to be required. The ICANN board is asking for something, being able to articulate, hey, we could look at this, but we need to put these other things on hold. We've been thinking we're valuable. This is why we thought they were valuable. You know, starting to be able to have things like that in place. And certainly this stuff is already communicated about, you know, sort of informally as part of the SX public presentations and whatnot. So similarly, you know, we want the SX to feel empowered to continue to approach the ICANN board when additional funding or resources are required to achieve a project. You know, the NCAP working group is a place where this has happened recently. And we think the SX did the right thing by saying, hey, we could study this, but, you know, it's going to need a budget. It's a big problem. We can't just do this as a volunteer organization. And so this recommendation really is that, you know, with this in mind, the SAC should approach the ICANN board to refine requests, or to say, hey, you know, the scope requires more resources. Great. So I'm going to sort of switch gears to this interactions within ICANN, section. And a finding that we had is, you know, many individuals, both inside and outside of the SAC, identified that creating more interaction with other SOs and ACs should be an area of focus for the SAC. And I think generally people reflected that the SAC is, you know, more involved than it used to be in terms of communication. And some people noted ways that recently the SAC has been, you know, even more present from either joint meetings or, you know, participation in the SOAC's chair meeting. This survey question is, you know, how satisfied are you with current level interaction? Definitely people neutral, somewhat unsatisfied or very unsatisfied, but also, you know, a good amount somewhat satisfied, but, you know, not a ringing endorsement of everyone being very satisfied by it. As part of this, one of the findings is also, there's a figure here, you know, how often is the advice given by the SAC incorporated into the policy development processes of other SAACs? And this is an interesting question. It's, of course, somewhat biased by, you saw at that beginning, that the people who responded are from a subset of SAs and ACs. But a lot of people didn't know. And as you can see here, the very often blue bottom of the bottom, sorry, blue bar at the bottom is sort of on the smaller side. There's the sometimes bar in the middle that's a little bit bigger. So, you know, this is something to sort of think about in terms of forging stronger relationships and maybe, you know, instead of not knowing, having a better idea there of what's happening. So this is a recommendation that will probably change in wording to some extent. But the original recommendation as it currently stands is that the SAC designate an outward liaison to each SOAC that's willing to receive one. But we are picturing this as a liaison light. So something structured because of stuff previously, the SAC members really are working very hard. They have a lot on their plate right now to allow for more communication without placing a full set of large responsibilities on an SAC member where they need to be, you know, doing a lot more work. And so perhaps the reworded version of this might not use the phrase outward liaison, but a designated touch point or something like that, because I think we've learned from feedback that that term might have a lot of, you know, sort of baggage with the current definition. But the goal is to have someone on the SAC that's sort of, you know, responsible for an open line of communication to a given SO and AC so that they can be, you know, generally paying attention to the activities and CDD processes of that SO and AC. And can, you know, sort of help to see or flag if, you know, the things the SAC are thinking about might interact with that SO or AC in a way that's worth saying something about proactively and in advance. And so this is something that, you know, we heard lots of stories about people's interactions with the SAC over the past few years, both positive and also places where, you know, things could potentially add more communication. And we sort of recommend that this touch point would be a valuable way to help increase communication, keeping in mind how busy the SAC members are. On a similar note, you know, in the process of developing each SAC series document, which are those key recommendation documents, we do recommend the SAC explicitly discuss who affected parties may be and whether or not those affected parties should be consulted for feedback, you know, prior to the publication of a document or topic. The goal here, you know, isn't to sort of tie up the SAC's ability to work, but really to have the chance for feedback to be given and for that feedback to be considered when advice is being put together. Also, of course, this is good because the more we can all talk about SSR issues, the more we're thinking about it, benefits there. We also recommend that the SAC Administrative Committee provide an email update to the leadership of other SOs and ACs about 1 month prior to each ICANN meeting. And this could be something, you know, short, but we're picturing something with links to relevant SAC documents and proceedings from the past period, perhaps a link to the website if stuff is posted there. But just the idea of increasing communication and sort of thought around SSR by having something light like this. There's a question about transparency that we put on this page, and there's a tension we'll talk about that is between, you know, the need for responsible disclosure versus full transparency when it comes to SSR issues. This question was just asking, you know, how do you feel as though SX transparency balances with competing values, the need for confidentiality? Interestingly, you know, a lot of people did feel like the current balance is correct, but a lot of others want the SX to be more transparent. And thankfully on the right, no one thinks the SAC is too transparent. That could be a dangerous thing in terms of security issues. But yeah, this is just sort of one way of starting to have a little more even interaction. Of course, this is a light recommendation. Similarly, we do think the SAC should have additional materials online to help consolidate information and increase transparency. The SAC online presence isn't necessarily bad. It has their documents. There's a lot there. But we did identify in the report specific things that people brought up, either in interviews or in surveys, that we agreed with on reflection. And so those are here. I won't walk through them now. But we also would recommend that the SAC, you know, have a yearly meeting where they just think about the website and ask the question, you know, what else should be here? Are there things we can provide to have a little more transparency? So this includes items like, you know, a description of this correspondence series that was just created, a link to the most recent ARR, articulation of how people might request feedback from the SAC, that kind of thing. Finally, you know, we thought a bit about this accountability of the SAC. And, you know, as it stands right now, the SAC is held accountable directly to the ICANN board. You know, the board decides upon its membership. We feel like that structure is appropriate. You know, it's important that the SAC is able to sort of say things that other people might not like to hear given the need for security. And, you know, we definitely feel like it seems like that kind of thing can happen. So we don't suggest that, you know, the SAC should somehow be accountable to someone other than the board directly. So I'll pause before I switch to size and membership just to see if my co-presenter Greg has any additional thoughts on these. Greg?
No, I mean, I think the only thing that I would briefly add on the accountability piece, Chris, is that having kind of a part of an organization be accountable to the board and typically only the board is pretty standard in kind of nonprofit and volunteer-based governance. So I think that's pretty consistent with what you see other organizations doing.
Thanks. That's a great point. Appreciate it. All right, size and membership. So the SAC right now does not undergo what you would call active or targeted recruiting to get new members, but rather it recruits informally based on sort of assessed need and the existing network of SAC members. People can certainly apply, and anyone can apply. You can send an application in to the membership committee. But many people we talk to would like to see improvements in the SAC's recruiting process. And at the same time, there's a trade-off that, again, the SAC's very busy, so whatever improvements must be made without putting too much of a burden on the SAC's volunteers. So first recommendation at this point, the current number of SAC members we think is appropriate. There are roughly 40 members of the SAC, so you know, adding too many more could potentially be a management issue, just to keep everything coordinated. But there are so many areas of expertise to cover that, you know, it seems like cutting it way down would also potentially negatively impact that. That said, you know, we do feel like, you know, the size being correct does not mean that there should be, you know, no flow of people onto and off of the SAC, right? And so while the size can be maintained, you know, there should be a flow of individuals onto and off of the SAC to provide new ideas and perspectives while retaining expertise. We recommend that each year the SAC develop a formalized recruiting plan with specific goals, potential recruiting targets, meetings to attend, you know, potential messaging for prospective candidates, and any other items deemed useful, right? So sort of take that pause, think a little bit about, you know, what does the plan for this year look like, and, you know, what do we want to accomplish in our recruiting? There are a lot of reasons we talk about in the report as to why this could be useful, you know, increasing the robustness of talent pipeline, potentially easing the transition of members who have been on the SAC for a while and want to do new things without sort of, you know, having an ad hoc sort of, oh, we need to find someone else with experience in this one place because this great person is leaving. And also just, you know, I'll end it there. You can read the slide. This particular question was about the efficacy of SAC's recruiting operations. And you can see here that neutral and don't know are actually the most common responses. And there's a lot of people who feel like the recruiting of the SAC is ineffective. From the sort of evidence of people who filled in other parts of the survey or talked to us in person, you know, a lot of these people said, well, hey, the SAC does not have an official recruiting process, and so I don't really know, you know, what to even think about this question. But, you know, this is sort of one of the reasons why we feel like there's room to make this a little more structured. On that note, part of what can be useful in broadening the network of the SAC and, you know, finding people for these roles is to be more involved in some of the security community outside of ICANN. And so, you know, these two notes sort of get it that. We do think that there would be value in the SAC having funding to send a person to, you know, two or three security function conferences outside of ICANN meetings where you can meet people interested in these topics, perhaps present upon work that the SAC is doing, and sort of, you know, bring back those people, oh, I met these people, to the membership committee to think about. Many SAC members, you know, potentially go to these types of meetings their own as individuals, but we do think there's value, you know, from speaking with Steve and Shlomo. This is where they meet people in the field who have good skills. Similarly, you know, especially in the last half decade, a lot of academic or other institutions are sort of creating more public-related cybersecurity divisions or academies or things like that. And we recommend that the membership committee should basically do a little bit of an assessment of the landscape there and think, you know, what are the programs where there are potential academics who could bring useful new perspectives to the SAC, and keep those in mind when making the recruiting plan for the upcoming year. Here's a question. Board. More of a comment. how the reasons of the board should interact. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess you could say some of those things are business as usual. And our intent isn't to say that these things aren't ever done. I think it's more sort of formally having an idea of this is the process, this is what should happen. But I don't know, Greg, do you have any other comments on Buck and Alan's comments?
No, I agree with that.
Yeah. I think that, yeah, a lot of that stuff has happened, but informally. So in terms of size and membership, another finding is this lack of geographical and gender diversity on the SAC. And, you know, most of the individuals on the SAC are male. Most are from the U.S. and Europe. And we sort of heard from a lot of people, well, you know, we can't have diversity for diversity's sake at the expense of technical skills. But at the same time, it's important to have perspectives from a broad variety of regions and a broad variety of types of individuals. So, you know, we feel like this is another spot where having that formal recruitment plan can be very useful. And as we talk about in the report, you know, the SAC by itself can, of course, not solve any underlying gender imbalances within this field. But at the same time, you want to make sure that the processes are in place such that, you know, when it is possible to obtain both required diversity and technical expertise, you want to have the maximum likelihood of doing so. And so, you know, this recommendation is that the SAC should endeavor to recruit individuals with a strong technical background, but who also represent a broad set of geographical locations and a reasonably balanced set of genders, and that, you know, a discussion on this should be codified into each year's recruiting plan. Finally, in terms of, one of the other items that came up, and one thing that was talked about a bunch is, you know, members of the SAC feel very comfortable challenging each other and their ideas. But it was noted that there does not currently exist a review process for SAC's external liaison. And a couple people said, you know what, I don't know if I'd feel comfortable sort of saying, you know, I think something could be different. And so, you know, we have a recommendation here that the SAC membership committee, as it is, end of the last year of a three-year term, will do a bit of a review and make a recommendation on if our members should continue on for another term. And so this recommendation 26 is basically to also do a review of SAC's external liaisons and provide a mechanism by which, you know, the liaison can know, hey, these things that you're doing are really useful. Maybe there's some ways to change things you're doing. And make modifications there. 27 here, SX leadership should be limited to 2 3-year terms. The SX should impose new term limits on non-leadership members. After sort of thinking about this for a bit and talking with people, you know, we think it's important for there to be a change in leadership so that, you know, fresh perspectives can lead the SX over time. There are benefits from that. At the same time, given sort of the bespoke nature of some of the skills required for the SAC, term limits on non-leadership members don't really seem to make a lot of sense in this context, especially as long as, you know, new people keep coming onto the SAC and, you know, people are going off the SAC, and that certainly seems to be happening. So, of course, there are some people who've been on the SAC for a while. This aligns with the SAC's current limits, except for the SAC chair. There's something strange in the current ICANN bylaws that prevents the SAC chair from being term limited. And so we have a separate recommendation, not shown here, that's recommending that the SAC work with ICANN board to update that so that they can actually term limit their chair. So another item we looked at and thought about a bunch is conflict of interest. And, you know, this is something that we heard a good amount about, and it's interesting because, you know, in order to have the technical expertise and security to be on the SAC, you know, you have to have experience in this field. And, of course, you know, in doing that, you work for a company, you learn it somehow, and there's a potential conflict of interest that, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, you know, the potential for conflict of interest is unavoidable. What really matters is, you know, are there conflicts? What's actually taking place? And so this is a survey question where, you know, sort of asking about the perception of conflict of interest, and there's sort of an answer here in the middle, not totally surprising. What we did do is we spent a lot of time sort of sitting in on FSAC meetings and hearing how people were conducting themselves and getting a sense, you know, do people call each other out if they think someone is biased in what they're saying? And there does seem to be a healthy culture within the FSAC of doing that kind of thing. You know, we sat in on meetings where a new topic was being discussed and the FSAC would begin by going around in a circle and saying, okay, well, let's disclose our preconceived notions of this idea. And so there does seem to be good debate within the FSAC to say, hey, you know, this is where I'm coming from before this conversation. You know, this is why you might feel that way. And you know, focusing on actually getting to a consensus that is free from a conflict of interest. There was one thing structurally that we felt could be improved, and that is the FSAC conflict or disclosure of interest statement on its website. So these are there. They are certainly updated, but it's a little bit tricky to know when the disclosure of interest for a particular FSAC member was updated. By the bylaws, they need to be updated at least yearly or whenever there's a, by the operating procedures, it needs to be at least yearly or whenever there's a major change. So this recommendation, as you can see, we added this red statement to the disclosure template. We'd like to recommend that for each member of the FSAC, be very clear publicly when that disclosure of interest was last updated. And all of the FSAC documents link to this page, so you know people can go and get that information there. Finally, the last recommendation here has to do with self-improvement. And basically, the FSAC had done a great job of implementing the recommendations from its last report back in 2009. But one thing we did notice as an independent examiner is that, you know, more so than in other situations, I think members of the FSAC really embraced this process and said, you know, hey, you know, we want to be learning, we want to be improving things, let's think about it, and we look forward to the results of this process. And so there were a lot of ways that we saw the FSAC to be, you know, in the process of self-improvement, even when we started, and show signs of showing, you know, reflection over time. And so here we're basically saying, you know, the FSAC should continue to do that. It's a great thing culturally to do. There are particular examples we called out in the report, from updating operating procedures to, you know, conducting its own polls on effectiveness and other items. But that's really this year. I'll pause for a moment and sip my water. Greg, do you have any other thoughts on these last two sections?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I would be inclined to probably hurry along and open it up just more generally for questions, I think.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. This this next step slide is pretty short. Here's our project roadmap. The public comment period will go through December 3rd. We recently gave a presentation very similar to this at ICANN 63. And then the final report will be published December 17th. So, this slide basically says the same thing. So with that in mind, we should definitely go to Q&A, and I see there are a couple of questions in the chat that I haven't had a chance to respond to, so I can read back and take a look at that as well. In conflicts of interest. As soon as it happens. Current. Maxim, I might have trouble understanding the example here. My apologies if I'm missing something.
So, Chris, it might be if, let's say, a member on the FSAC was contracted out to do, like, an independent review, maybe, as might be the example there. Mm-hmm. I'm not certain.
Right.
Or for any other kind of ICANN-related work.
And one has a contract as a result. So we didn't run into anyone talking about one of these things happening. I have to go back and remember specifically what the requirement is there. Greg, do you remember off the top of your head? I just haven't looked at that.
I don't recall either. I have a guess, but I don't want to guess, so we should just go back and look.
Yeah, we'll go back and look and make sure that that's appropriately thought about. We have read through them. I just don't want to off the cuff respond to something so detailed and have it wrong. But you know, there are ways that SPAC members with and basically recuse themselves or not sign on to particular documents. And so, you know, that would be the mechanism by which to do that. Other questions? No. All right. Well, if anyone does have questions, we're happy to follow up. The email address on the prior slides is the best way to get in touch with us because MSSI will basically pass along any questions to the team. We're happy to do so and definitely, you know, looking forward to the feedback we get so we can consider the ways to roll that into the final draft report. Draft final report becomes final report. I do see Cheryl is typing in the chat, so we'll pause for a moment for that. Yeah, our pleasure. Thank you. All right, so I don't know if
yeah, Christmas last. I suggest we close the webinar 6 minutes early. As you said, if anyone has any questions, they can submit that to you directly or to any of the MSSI staff, and we'll pass them on to you. And then the reminder of the public comment closing on the first week of December. And I think that's all. Unless you have anything else, we can wish everyone a good evening, good afternoon, and a good day.
Yeah. Thank you so much, everyone.
Yeah.
Jinx.
Thank you. Yvette, would you stop the recording, please?